So we've been talking quite a bit about embodiment it's an ongoing theme to just bring us really here and maybe begin to understand how many of the imprints of our lives are patterned on our body, our body energies, our bodily tensions, our bodily non-places, our bodily impulsiveness, certain patterns of anxiety or pressure or things we can't even find words for, but when you relax and release them, some weight drops off you, as it were, some kind of something you felt tight, you suddenly feel more open, and what was that? We were somehow, without even knowing it, we were carrying a lot of pressure, impact, tension, resistance that is coming not from physical labor or physical impact, but really from psychological and emotional impressions. So accordingly, it's absolutely, my opinion, absolutely necessary to really constantly bring to mind the antidote for all of these, powerful antidote for all of these impressions is the qualities of goodwill. It's a very small word, empathy, goodwill, and there's a lot in there. And the theme is that if everything, as we experience ourselves, however that is, this constant atmosphere and quality of granting permission, doesn't mean 100% approval, celebration, love, radiance, but just permission, non-resistance, non-aversion. It really is the medicine to allow things to change by themselves, rather than me trying to change it. Just basically bring up the right atmosphere and keep sort of steeping your awareness in that, your awareness of what's your body, your bodily impressions, your mind states, and then you can allow those qualities to release themselves. Just like something, a trapped nerve, if we massage it correctly, it will release itself. You don't have to, you just give the right pressures and something can let go. And no word is going to do that, however much we may know the words. No word is going to do that. You've got to get right to it, and this is what the embodiment principle is. You're getting right to right under the skin and where your awareness is embodied, because that's where it's very direct. There's no distance. It's very sensitive. You're vulnerable. You are felt. Bodies are feeling experiences. So again, embodiment, I'm not talking specifically about the anatomy, but the very feeling of having a body, being in a body. This could be a sense of heat, pressure, stirring, clarity, uprightness, openness, and all these various attributes. And we can go into that a little later, perhaps. Today, I'd really like to introduce for your attention the qualities of goodwill. Will is not sick or causing sickness. Sickness is everything that destroys, corrodes, corrupts, sabotages, shuts down, wounds, blames. This is all sick. So it's the non participation in that, and you notice how, it's obvious, isn't it? But then you can see how easy it is to do something for you idiot. What? That's going to cure it. Huh? You don't deserve that. What? You're a nuisance. You turned up late. Nuisance. Well, that's really helpful, isn't it? These kinds of things. You're not very good. You're not good enough. You're not good enough as a meditator. You're not good enough as a human being. You're not good enough mother, father, whatever. You're just not good enough. That's going to help, is it? So you go, oh, try to be good enough. Hey, what are you doing? Where do these standards come from? Who invented, who got the slide rule to decide who's good enough? What's doing that? What measures us? Yeah? What measures us, puts us in a box or a category or a measurement? Right? Now, what's called these qualities of goodwill are called the measureless, appamāna, no measuring. No putting you against some standard. Yeah? No abstract standard that you stand against and are seen as not quite good enough. In fact, really not good enough. So that measuring mind, you know? What can you measure? You could measure the length of this. Right? You could measure the length of this stick. Right? Can you measure, say, truth? How long is your truth? Do you have short truth or fat truth? How long is it? How big is it? How long? These are not real values. They're not measurable in that way. Yeah. So when we dip into them, with a quality of not measuring against some abstract standard. Yeah. Whenever we experience truth or the clear or the aspiring, dwell in it, abide in it, enjoy it. Whenever we experience that which is crushing, corrupting, damaging, move away from it. That's about the only measurement you need to make. What to go into, what to withdraw from, what to make much of, what to, not suitable to give attention to. What not suitable to keep feeding attention to. And in this way, attention, we're in a dynamic system. We are a dynamic system. This means whatever you select for your attention, that will grow. Yeah? So we are like organic, rather like a spinning energy. And if you push it that way, it spins and it gradually gets bigger. Yeah. So we're a dynamic, and you keep introducing that which is good, truthful, beautiful, it grows. It grows incrementally. And you just start to withdraw from the painful, the cruel, the harsh, the judgmental, and it dwindles. And so you could even track this in terms of the way that the brain works. You know, certain synapses, certain connections are associated with compassion and joy. And if you keep going to those areas of your brain actually grow. The brain is plastic, it grows. It's not a fixed thing. You know, we're an organism, not a machine. you keep feeding certain energies, then parts of your brain start to change. They track this because you're giving a lot of energy to it. You feed it. Certain parts start to just fade out. Hatred, bitterness, start to decrease. Yeah, so this is right down to neurology. Now this is so important this time because you know, we are living systems, organic systems. This means constantly we're a relational experience. So citta, awareness, when it comes into the manifest experiences, so whenever there is the presence of anything, sight, sound, thought, there's a relationship. It resonates. Yeah. It's excited, it's indifferent, it has some kind of resonance to it. It's rather like, you can imagine the citta being like a lake. And if you drop even one leaf on it, it shivers. Throw a rock in it. So that's our experience, is like that. That's the nature of citta. It resonates with experience, and it generates feeling. And it generates something called perception, which means the immediate interpretation. Beautiful, frightening, attractive, fearful. You know, it's just immediate. It's immediate flash, and it also generates a response to that. You know, go this way, go that way, avoid it. So that's what citta, in its manifestation, in its active conditioned form, is doing. Now the other thing that can occur, is particularly when we are aware of something whereby our response has no effect. So you know, you're out in the rain. You don't like the rain. It's cold. The rain doesn't care whether you like it or not. So after what happens, you just shut down and just keep going. You close down the feeling because, you know, you just got to get out of it, you know. So you also have this ability to shut down feeling to the mental feeling to a degree anyway. You're left with a kind of perhaps a hurried state or a grumbly state. So this is kind of what this is natural. But more far-reaching, I think, for many of us, because we generally can, you know, half an hour, 20 minutes, 10 minutes, we can get out of the rain, we can get out of the cold, we can get out of the snow, we can find shelter. But primarily, our citta is very much attuned to other beings, other humans. We're exceptionally affected by other people. This is being a mammal, being born in somebody's body, having many, many years of being brought up. We are very affected, that's our nature, to be strongly affected, highly attuned to other people. Other people give us praise, give us blame, give us rewards, give us punishment. So then we're very affected, and we don't want that punishing stuff. Yeah, we want to have the good stuff, and of course we don't get it all the time. Another thing that can happen, which is perhaps considered to be one of the most drastic punishments, is you just exclude somebody. You don't count. I don't see you. You don't count. And then you don't get anything. And your citta just feels, I'm cut off. I'm lost. Because on a relational level, there has to be something to relate to. Yeah. So if it's difficult, I can push against it. Yeah. But if it's not there, and there's a sense of being the response from another human being to being cut off, you're excluded. I don't see you at all. You don't count at all. Whatever you say makes no difference to me at all. Then this is exclusion. This is very difficult, because part of our healthy process is to feel and respond, and we deny that. That sense of relationship is cut off. So this is considered, you know, solitary confinement, ostracism, you know. These are things, exclusions, that really very powerfully affects the citta. We feel alone, lost, and that's the worst thing. If you've ever, you know, been in situations, say you're stuck up a mountain somewhere, hey, we've got a long way to go, we're tired. There's three of us together, we can make it. It's okay. You've got to struggle, it's hard work, your feet, your legs go stiff. Come down the mountain, you're cold, but there's three of you together, you work together, you feel okay. Yeah, you get down the mountain, the two other guys say, we're not talking to you. Shut off, you know. So this is a kind of very severe thing to happen. Now, when we live in our modern societies, then hopefully we have family, friends and so on, Kalyanamitta. But you also realize that most of the people in general are in situations where the responsiveness is very limited. Yeah. You walk past 100 people. Excuse me. Get out of the way, will you? Honk, honk, honk. You know, this kind of thing. This is kind of a mild level of it. And then you're not exactly completely excluded, but all that's included is your ability to function. If you do this job for me, I will acknowledge you. If you don't, I will fire you. You know? What I want from you is your ability to function. Get it done. So you do that, so you become a function. Because then at least there's some sense of being in something. So people get, you know, entrained to be function. And really become an object in a system. You are now the managing so-and-so, so-and-so. You are now the assistant so-and-so, so-and-so. You are now, you know, the director so-and-so, so-and-so. You are now that. That's what you are. And that bit of you, I will relate to the rest of you, not my issue at all. Don't bring it here. So you get a little bit. The rest of you is excluded. So it's a kind of partial exclusion. What happens is that then that piece, where you are getting some kind of acknowledgement, you really put a lot of effort into to be good at. To, you know, and sometimes, you know, I remember one of the monks, he'd been a director of one division of a big company for many years. It was, you know, it didn't sound great, but he was the director of the company, put his heart into that, and then they had some decision, global decisions, big company. Well, we think this division, we'll close it down because it doesn't really make money, and we'll move our workers to another country. So we'll close that division down. So they said to him, we'll give you 3 weeks, 3 weeks notice, that's the end. And about a week later, this person went into the kitchen as his father hanging from the ceiling on a rope. You know, just And at the funeral, I think they sent a bunch of flowers or something. That was it. You know, just so you know, you become a very limited object, and you depend upon that for whatever sense of being valued that another human being can give you, and then that's taken away. Right? So valuing, you know, honouring, I see you, you know. You're not just the dumb object, I see you. So important, you know. Whether I agree with you, you know, it's details, but I only see you. That's essential, that's basic goodwill, that's basic decency. And I do sense that in many areas for people, this quality gets lost. Seeing people just as a subject, you too. Happiness and sadness, you too get sick, you too enjoy friendship, you too get disappointment, have bad days, get upset, you too, just like me. You, that quality, you, yeah, with subject. You're not just an object to fit into my needs or my company's needs, even worse. You're a subject, and that, handing that over. And we can feel very much, if we look into our societies, that you think, do our governments really care for us? You know, they say all these things, you're like, oh, wonderful. You're listening, oh, come on. You know, it's, are you really interested in the welfare of the people, or you just want some power? You know? I'm not saying that's universal, but one can feel that, particularly in certain cases. So this diminution of respect, value, inclusion, exclusivity, or filtering inclusion. You can be here provided you do this. Otherwise, you know, right? And there's all kinds of, you know, examples of that. Women getting less pay or being, you know, seconded and so on, where, you know, something just, you are not good enough. You know, well, you know. So this kind of thing going on has quite a feature of our society and our workplace. So most of you are, I imagine, in some kind of workplace, and I hope yours is more benevolent than that one I just narrated. But sometimes they're very harsh. You know, somebody else, friend of mine, saying, well, he worked in some kind of company, and the board of directors, they want 3% profit increase. So they pass that message down to the management below. They want 3%. We better ask for 5% to make sure we get the 3%. So the message goes down. We want 5% improvement. People are wondering, oh, fine, we better make sure you get that, but ask for 7%. Get level down to the, you want 7%. The people on the ground floor, the ground, the workers, we want 12% increase. Just, everybody's crushing everyone else to get the numbers to go up. To get the numbers to go up so the shareholders will be happy and so forth. So the money. And actually, I like you, but the money's more important. Sorry. So where you get this kind of, you know, capitalist thing, you get the conflict between values and valuables. And when valuables become more important than values, you realize that loving kindness, goodwill is going to start to be reduced. Yeah. And you'll be measured in terms of performance and so on. Yeah. People working crazy hours, working overtime, working. I think this is dreadful. Is that the system we've created for what? For what? To have an improved lifestyle. So we can have an improved lifestyle. Get it? You know? Isn't it? It's ironic, isn't it? Improved lifestyle, nervous wreck with a few bits of guilt, you know, a few nice gold rings and something, nervous shattered wreck. Wow, it's really good. So in this kind of influence in the world, it's not like we don't see it directly as ill will. Right. You know, people aren't directing violence towards it, but it's a kind of sustained quality of non-offering of like very basic goodwill. Like, I see you as another human being, just like me. You know, hello, you count because you're a human being. Just that, nothing more than that. And it gets to be the case that people start to do that to themselves. We don't see our humanity, we don't feel our humanity, we've judged ourselves in terms of our performance, or what we imagine other people think of us. How well we're doing. How much we can do, how fast we can do it. That's what other people will like. If I'm faster, then do more. And we kind of begin to place ourselves under the same slavery, racing, pushing to become something so that we will be good enough. And it's rather like, you know, the ideal lifestyle. You're a nervous wreck, but you're rich. Yeah. It's straining to be a good enough, whatever that is. And all you ever know is you're not quite there yet. Because your mind can always imagine somebody better. You can imagine what other people might think, might be thinking, might be whispering, might be saying, might look at you as, you know? And then this ill will starts to descend on you like fog, and you can't quite find out where it is, because not as if anybody's actually said anything bad. It's just a feeling we've learned to exclude ourselves. You know? Because this process of excluding bits of you, the only bit I'm interested in is that piece. You start to do that, you see, you exclude aspects of yourself. Right? That you don't find very good or worthy or interesting or useful or something. You exclude aspects of yourself. And to compensate for that, one gets very busy doing all kinds of stuff to fill up that lonely, empty, unsettled sense that one has from excluding parts of your own heart and awareness. Or you start buying all kinds of stuff to fill up this feeling of not quite good enough that you don't even want to feel anymore, because you know something you can never get out of it. So you just keep doing stuff, buying stuff, going places, having things, to fill up what is really the absence of basic goodwill. Not even, certainly not what you call love, but just basic goodwill. sensitivity, empathy. This is an organic system. It needs some care. I should enjoy caring for it. It's not, oh, it needs some care, it must be pathetic and weak and broken and stupid, I suppose I better look after the thing. You know, well, you know, have a rest. You're pathetic, but never mind. You know, there's something wrong with you, but oh well. No, I enjoy caring for this. This is what I got. This is my piece of the universe. It's been in my care. So my job is to, you know, wrap around this thing and see what I can do to help it. It's not a nuisance. And if it's got some defects, well, one will say, oh, look, who can help that one? Oh, yeah, that must be difficult. Oh, you idiot, slap, slap, slap. when this quality becomes kind of sustained, this sense of exclusivity, then Jitta closes down on that. So we don't even really feel that much. We don't feel that much. We may be up in our heads thinking about something, but don't really feel very much. How are you feeling? I'm okay. Hope nobody notices. Because they'll blame me for not feeling okay. You're not fun anymore. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is kind of inferred ill will. It's not goodwill. It's not, you know, it's the opposite of it. And, yeah, of course people can do that. But often the time we begin to inherit a program. You know, the jitta learns a particular program of ill will. And it just keeps doing it to you. Because that's what it's learned to do. Exclude that, exclude that, exclude that. Don't give any of that. So you get this kind of fog of ill will descends. And the signs of it that you begin to know, particularly notice it in your mental, your programs, particularly if you think about yourself. Well, be careful now, don't do it. Just imagine, you know, think about yourself, oh, things I didn't do, things I haven't done, things are wrong with me. Yeah, or then when we come to a renunciation experience like this, when suddenly you've unplugged some of the ways one might get one's comfort and reassurance and, you know, some pleasant feeling out of watching something or going to a show or, you know, whatever people want to do. You unplug that and you slow down, then you feel the atmosphere. And it just feels like certain heaviness, staleness, stagnation. And say, okay, meditate. No. More effort is needed. So then more ill will is the general recipe. If you're feeling bad, put some ill will on it. That works every time. Give it a kick. So the result to all this, you get psychology very limited, naturally, because you only got one program going. And then there's this effect on the body, because the overall effect, when the body cannot, or embodiment cannot survive in ill will. I mean, it can survive to a certain degree, but when it gets really bad, what happens is you just go up into your head. And you're out there. Your body kind of shuts down. You don't feel very much. Because you're rather than feeling that pressure, you sort of not feel anything. This is not a choice. It's not a decision. It's a reflex. You begin to dissociate. So you're coming back, encouraged to come back into the body, and you say, So doing this kind of slowly, steadily, and where's the place where you can feel some sense of a gift, a given, that doesn't matter how good you are. It's there to support you. It does not matter how good you are, how good you feel, how mean you are, how nasty you are, how violent you are. Doesn't matter. Here you are. That's what we call that ground. So that's the sacred, because this is what we call sanctuary, you know, where it doesn't matter what you've been, who you are, you've got that. And where's that? It's not something that somebody else can give you. If somebody else can give it to you, they can take it away. It's got to be yours and given to you. Right? Not something you earn by being good. It's very basic ground. So this is just a sense of body. I mean, it's not exactly a place in your body, but probably the easiest place to feel it is when your feet are on the ground, or you're sitting on your cushion, just get a sense of there, and the earth is holding, and just sit with that. Whatever you're feeling, that's fine. You know? And so you're using that somatic sense of groundedness. And then from that, safety. Which means, safety means here, there's no standard to rise up to. I'm free from praise and blame. I'm free from the opinions of myself and others. Yeah, and it's not, you know. So we generate a simple somatic place. This is where the body is so helpful, because if you're looking at your psychologies, your character, you can always. Well, not so good, maybe better. She thinks this, and after all they said that, and he was really nice. Somebody likes me, but they deluded probably. You don't really know. So you just forget that. It's too complicated. Just go to your body, sit, feel the ground. That's the standard. You can't sit, lie down. You can't lie down or sit. Well, I haven't got there yet. But basically the sense of the body being held and allowing, you know, whatever you feel or think just to be there, and you've got a place where instead of reacting to it, you sense that simple presence of here you are. Is that? Feel the simple, very simple basic safety of it. And this doesn't sound like it's going to change the world. But, you know, we're talking about a dynamic system. This means essentially that you put one drop in and it begins to create a pattern. It begins to stimulate a certain trend. Because instead of the trend of, you know, don't feel so good, therefore something wrong with me, therefore something wrong with me, I'm never going to be this way, and other people think this, and I'm never as good as that, and I should be like this, and after all, I'm probably for my past life, terrible things I did when I was 10, the cosmos of ill will, which just magnifies into all these statistics you can create, as that, I did that, I did that, and she said that, and I never did that, and I should have been that. You create this kind of galaxy of ill will to live in. We can start with, is this little place safe? Safe? What's that? So what? Safe, safe, big deal, safe. Safe. That's enough. Yeah. You start to, around me. Nobody's around this. Nobody's bothering me. Oh yeah, and your body starts to wake up, come alive, a little bit more, and you feel a living system, sensitive living system. I'm no longer an object in somebody else's opinion, I'm never even an object of my own opinion. I'm not an object in my mind, I'm a sensitive subject that's feeling, breathing. And be careful, you know, not breathing right. Yeah, no, you're breathing, that's good enough. As long as it keeps you alive, doesn't matter, be perfect. So it's just the subjective presence. So it's maybe a phrase you can gloss over, but this is, I think it's really important, subjective presence, which means there's only one quality here, which is you. You're not an object. You're not seen as something, measured as something, compared with something. You are feeling it. Feeling where you are. And nobody else can do that for you. You feel exactly where you are. It doesn't sound like much, does it? But it's giving a certain, say, priority or authority to you. Not you as I think of you, but you as you feel. It's yours. It's not like supposed to be like anybody else's. It's not anybody else's choice or judgment whether it's good enough. It's yours. And it's giving you back. Giving you back yourself. That is an enormous gift. To give you back to yourself. Not comparing you with your father, your mother, da-da-da-da. Something. Just right now, yourself, giving you back to yourself. Feel it as it's felt. And so this, you know, actually as it's felt, be that which can feel what is felt. Now, of course, feeling itself, vedana, pleasure, pain, this comes and goes. It can be unpleasant, pleasant sensation. But rather than the feeling, be that which can feel, which can know the feeling, pleasant, painful, pleasant, painful, and know that instead of reacting to that pleasure, pain, it says, there's one way here. If I enhance, if I largen, if I widen, if I could just, as your metaphor is called, an opening, my ability to be sensitive, that quality itself becomes so paramount, becomes the most important thing. The feeling doesn't matter so much. Because, feeling comes and goes. What's important is the ability to be, to feel. That is citta. To experience a feeling, to be that which feels. Feeling comes and goes and changes. But instead of judging, reacting to what's felt, we're mindful of it. So now we've got into a nice safe piece of Buddhist language. Mindful of feeling. And it can sound like mindful of feeling, like, oh well, feeling comes and goes, we'll be mindful of it. Watch it, here it goes, yeah. I want a drag. But it's not, it's just this capacity we have to be aware of a feeling and to celebrate that mysterious, unnameable, measureless quality. To be aware of a feeling, is that good? Bad? No, just get the words out. It somehow enables feeling to be processed, pleasant feeling to come through and to be understood. Unpleasant feeling to come through, to be understood. And instead of those reactions, there's just something more equanimous, more sensitive, more endowed with goodwill. But this actually is the nature of the healthy citta. If we come into that, so again, subjectivity, subjective presence, it's another word for citta, for awareness. If we come into that, if we bring our attention into that, back to that, give attention to that subjective presence, sustain it, that's mindfulness, just holding, sustaining that, not dropping it. Or if you drop it, pick it up again. This allows feelings to be, instead of the reactions, we come to something begins to happen by itself. Because the nature of subjective presence, awareness, citta, as it experiences manifestations, is goodwill. It doesn't disease itself. It sees no point in poisoning itself. You wouldn't think this is that complex, but believe it, a lot of the time we like to poison ourselves. We don't like it, but we do it. Yeah. So, you know, gross example of parable, if you like. The Buddha says, well, if you get four thieves catch you, why four? Yeah, okay, four. One for each leg, one for one leg, one for the other. Good. Okay, they get you there, they pin you down, they start sawing your legs off with a saw. So, not pleasant. You could rightfully complain about this treatment. But he says, this is a parable, he says, if you let your mind dwell in ill will, then you really haven't followed the instructions. Because actually, it's bad enough having your legs cut off. This is not an agreeable experience. Why make it worse by adding ill will? It's not that, you know, if they got you pinned down, you feeling unhappy about it is probably not going to be their concern. Yeah. It's just a parable. Don't have to do that. So, but it does mean we also have the propensity, and this is of course an extreme example, to experience pain, even blame, unpleasant, because the worst thing isn't physical pain, it's psychological blame and exclusion. That's the worst thing. That really, you know, we have the ability to have that happen, and instead, I do not allow my mind to go into what? Defeat. Yeah? Bitterness. Sour. Bitter. I do not let that happen. That's a possibility. And so there, you know, if we look at that in a living example, say someone is blaming you. You know, you should do this, you should do that, you never turn up, you don't go, you're not as good as she is, kind of thing. Don't let your mind go into ill will. I think this person's got a problem. They seem to be unhappy. That's more the response, right? Rather than, oh, something wrong with me. This person's unhappy. That's apparent. They're upset. They're upset. How sad. Something, you've got a problem. That's more the response, rather than accepting and taking in and getting crushed by that. So this has been the, this is where we can turn the tide around from the ill will of others. And even from adopting this program of ill will to do to ourselves. So, you know, okay, you're not good enough, you did make mistakes, so. Ah, response. I experience regret. maybe this was unworthy of me. I think I need to be more careful. And call it navigation rather than moral recrimination. Right? So it's navigation. I should have woken up early, I've set my alarm, rather than, you idiot, you're lazy, you're incompetent, stupid, you're supposed to do this, you're never on time. Everybody thinks you're pathetic, you can't make it like everybody else can. No, just stop. Just switch your alarm clock on, will you? That's the end of the story. Try again next day. Everybody gets sleepy, everybody makes a mistake, everybody dozes off, you know. And then, you know, rather than you are no longer a valid member of the group, no, you are. This is what people do. So I remember, it's so helpful. I think when I was a student, you know, you get a bit of money by, in Britain, around about the Christmas times, a lot of, lot more parcels, a lot more package, a lot more things going through the post, Christmas cards. So the students who haven't got any money, they say, we'll give you a job. You know, you can do this delivering parcels for this 5-day period, because rather than hire, full-time people, you get part-time people. So I thought, okay, I'll do that, I'll get some money. So okay, get here at in the morning, 6 o'clock in the morning. So okay, first thing at 6 o'clock, I get there, do the job, get back to my flat. Okay, sit back. It's a great day. Next day, get up. Oh, I'm doing this really well. Get back to my flat and get some marijuana out, roll up a joint or two. So, oh yeah, it's really good, really relaxing. Oh my God, it's 9 o'clock in the morning. and then I go rush down, and the guy goes, oh, everybody sleeps in, no problem. That was the end of it. It's so wonderful, isn't it? You know, oh yeah, somebody actually sees you as just some scruffy, dope smoking student, and that's like that's what young guys do, So he wasn't giving you a moral lecture, But you think, oh yeah. Oh, thank you. That's a human being responding rather than a machine responding. So as you say, before you start to get into refinements, this basic responsiveness to not accept the tide of ill will, and not to, or if we feel it coming towards ourselves, okay, I don't mind the correction, I don't need the anger. I don't mind, information, I don't need the threat. And as we're doing it to ourselves. Now this is, you can cultivate like this, but you're also going to, as you slow down and steady down into your body, you're going to probably encounter places where there isn't really a voice. It's not really a spoken message. You ain't got something complaining. You just feel, seized up. And trying to straighten it up. Straighten up. And just try instead just coming into that. This may I be well? Well, how is this stuck state here? And where's my little piece of ground here? Just feel that. Stay with that. And can I feel my belly on top of that? Can I breathe out? And just encouraging quality of supportive goodwill just to, into your body. So it can help as just an exercise to establish as you basic goodwill, sitting, find your safe place and just imagine the quality around you, goodwill, acceptance around you, just like you're sitting in it. And it could be generated by someone or a moment or a time when somebody actually has showed that to you. So you remember that moment when she said that. She didn't have to say that, she just did that out of goodwill. Ah. That's the signal. Stay with that. Open that up, dwell in it. And you know, you can even let the person fade out of the picture. Try to get the quality of being seen in a benevolent way. Yeah. And just stay in that, abide in that, receiving goodwill. And whenever your mind goes, you know, well, I should do something for her. No, don't do that. Just receive it. And whenever you go, well, you know, I'm a nuisance, just receive the goodwill. You know, allow someone to show goodwill. To show goodwill is one of our great joys, to me, anyway. To be able to offer goodwill. You know, the heart feels good. Feels really good. You know, there's all kinds of things I can't do. Can't remember the chanting, for example. The 40 years. But one thing I'm getting better at is offering goodwill. I think the chances are that's going to stay there and get better as I get through my embarrassment, nervousness, feeling of, well, you know, what good am I anyway? You know, just forget it. Just offer goodwill. So when you're offering goodwill, it's really just the pure heart quality. to another, to yourself, to people in the past, in the present, people around you, just a sense of offering goodwill. And don't concern yourself with whether they need it. It's not. Don't worry if they need it. It won't be wasted. They don't need it. Believe me, they do need it. But they don't need it. It's all right. Just let it hang around in the atmosphere. Somebody else can pick it up. Don't worry whether they deserve it. That's really unpleasant. How much do you deserve? Or how good you can do it. Is this good enough goodwill? Is it really all embracing, suffusive, divine, loving kindness? Or is it just, you're okay, goodwill? don't measure it like that. Don't worry about the results. You know, I've given her three minutes of goodwill. She still looks miserable. I wasted my goodwill on you. I could have kept it for myself. So these are the kind of, you know, measuring things that we can do. Some of them, a couple of monks who were like that, had a very difficult time with each other. And so one guy, you know, and they couldn't get on. So he's gone, I've got to practice metta. Practice metta. Practice metta. Practice metta towards this guy. Practice metta. And the other monk, he didn't change. He said, I've wasted my metta on that guy. That's true. I actually said that. I spent an hour or so wasting my metta on that guy. Because that's not free, is it? It's saying, you know, I want a result. Don't ask for a result. Just enjoy. Because if you're not offering goodwill, what are you offering? Indifference? Yeah, I don't even notice you. Is that really the best thing? And just it doesn't have to be a lot or said, or just a general sense of it. And then you know, well, this is my gift. I can do this. I feel good. And it just really, you know, helps, because the nature of goodwill is it is literally, as it says, it's all embracing. So whenever you generate towards another, if it is the real thing, you will feel it yourself. You know? You can't feel miserable and generate goodwill, can you? So if you start to generate towards another, it automatically begins to lift your own heart. Because it's not dualistic, it's holistic. So we generate a sphere, a holistic sphere of goodwill. And ever that's doing I, this being also is receiving that energy running through. It's my gift. The quality of goodwill is not, it's an energy. It fills your nervous system. It changes your body chemistry. And you feel it. And so you're offering it to another. You're also, you know, thank you for allowing me to offer you goodwill. Because it, you know. And in the presence of other beings is not disturbance, you know, or my space. It's actually something that is helping to enhance my space. So these various kinds of the way that differentiates, so that kindness is a sense of nourishing. It sees another in their subjectivity, and oh, it's so nice just to put something into that. Yeah. That's what subjectivity does. When this subject resonates another subject, we want to put something nice in it. You know, that's kind of part of the process of being a real human being. When you really see another person as a subject, not just as one's projections, there's that kind of response of, you know. And then when you see the other suffering, and you see this subject suffering, then there's a feeling of, I want to get there with that. I want to, you know, be there with it. I want to wrap around it. And that's called compassion. Rather than shove it out of the way. You know, when you see creature, you know, animal suffering, you can see it's just, or you see this, it's not an object, it's not just meat on legs. It's not just some yapping critter. It's a being that experiences feeling and loss and pain, just like I do. And it's suffering in the sense of compassion. I want to be with that. Doesn't mean I'm necessarily going to change it, I want to share that. That's also, this is called compassion. It inclines towards touching the pain of others. Beautiful quality. This is one of our great gifts. Mudita, I see your joy. Your joy makes me feel good. Yeah. Rather than, you're having a good time, I'm not having a good time. How come you got such a success and I'm not? That sets us apart. Mudita, I see your joyfulness. I can resonate with that. All right. Good for you. That's great. Yeah. And so we see, particularly with mudita, I see not just your happiness, I see your truth, your integrity. When I see your integrity, I feel it here. You are giving me, you are empowering me. Mudita, I enjoy that. So we enjoy each other's strengths, resilience, doggedness. You know, the wonderful qualities that human beings manifest to keep going, you know. There's something you can appreciate in these beings. That little piece you focus on. Mudita. And then your own heart opens into that shared gladness. Equanimity, we sense the ups and downs as being part of what nature is about, the waves of it, Vedana, feeling up, feeling down, making a mistake, being successful, getting it wrong, getting it right. Yeah. That must feel quite a lot for you. It's not indifference, it's a sense of I'm not going to react to the ups and downs. I'm going to extend my awareness over all of that and be that which can be a steadiness for you, can offer you a steadiness. And sometimes it's exactly what we need. We don't really need results, fixing, conclusions, answers. We just need someone to say, okay, here you are, I'm with that, steady. I'm offering you steadiness. And you think, oh yeah, you're no longer caught in the waves of up and down. These are the great gifts we can offer to ourselves, to others. So even to one's own experience, up and down, where's the steadiness? The ground. I can be with this. Not going to get rocked by the ups and downs. Tremendous effect of calming and centering, just that. Because when you get the feeling, it's always up and down. Is that I can be with this. That's equanimity. So that covers everything. So these are qualities to bring to mind, if any of that stays with you. I hope to be able to refer to these themes in the next few days, and certainly encourage you to remember, recollect, and make use of them. These are real healing tonics. So, offer this for your reflection.